Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome to another Live on Air. Nice to have your company today. And coming up on the programme, we'll be talking to Owen Swithin Walsh about the Kilkenny people and their contribution to the various rebellions, the Easter 1916 Rising. We have the Civil War and the War of Independence, a new book that he's produced, and he'll tell us all about that shortly. It's All-Ireland weekend coming up next weekend again, but this time it's for the football. Tyrone take on the holders Dublin. Dublin looking for four in a row. Tyrone looking for their first win since 2008, and we'll be talking to somebody about that. The Spanish Armada is something that is very close to the hearts of people in Spain and in Ireland, and there is a festival coming up in Sligo. It's an annual event. We'll be talking to Eddie about that a little later on in the programme. And if it's love that you're after, there is a matchmaking festival getting underway in Listunvarna on this coming Friday, and it lasts for 5 weeks. Listunvarna is on the west coast of Ireland. You'll find out more about the matchmaking festival on the programme. Now, if you'd like to contact the programme at any stage, you can do so by emailing ger@talkradioeurope.com. ger@talkradioeurope.com. Can I say thank you to Jose Antonio Sierra, because some of you may be receiving this programme because it's been sent to you by Jose Antonio, and he is our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant on the programme. More on that later. And we have lots of good music in there this evening as well. In fact, we're going to start music-wise today with this lovely song. Here's Brian McFadden and a song that's called Like Only a Woman Can. It's Live on Air on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
I wasn't perfect. I done a lot of stupid things. Still no angel. I wasn't looking for forgiveness. Wasn't laid up by my pride. Shocked by her attention. Did someone sign me up for love? I didn't want it. And now I can't live without it. She changed my life. She cleaned me up. She found my heart. Like only a woman can. She pulls me up when she knows I'm sad. She knows her man like only a woman can. She's kind of perfect. She's kind of everything I'm not. Yeah, she's an angel. And it's amazing how she's patient, even more at times I'm not. She's my conscience. And who decided I'd be hers? I wanna hate them, 'cause now I can't live without her. And she changed my life. She cleaned me up. She found my heart like only a woman can. She pulls me up when she knows I'm sad. She knows her man like only a woman can. Like only a woman can. Decided I'd be hers. I wanna hate them, 'cause now I can't live without her. Oh, and she changed my life. She cleaned me up. She found my heart like only a woman can. She pulls me up. Like only a woman can. like only a woman can.
The beautiful sound of Brian McFadden and a great song called Like Only a Woman Can. Got to take a very quick break. Come back to me just after that and we'll be checking in with the matchmaking festival in Listunvarna.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era. Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
It's that time of the year again, and you might well ask what time of the year it is, because I say that occasionally when we're doing different features. Well, we're going to go to Listunvarna in County Clare right now on the beautiful Wild Atlantic Way in Ireland, because at this time of the year, the entire town of Listunvarna is gearing up to be invaded for an entire month. The matchmaking festival takes place in the month of September in Listunvarna. Now, Julie Carr is the person that looks after marketing and public relations for the White Hotel Group, and she joins me on the phone right now. Julie, good afternoon or good evening, and thank you for joining us on Talk Radio Europe. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks very much for having us. We're gearing up for the festival. It's going to be a busy week now for the next week ahead. It kicks off on the 31st, next Friday.
Yep.
We've got two big country music weekends kicking off. Jerry Guthrie and Lisa McHugh in a big marquee. And also we have the Clare Hurlers are going to be officially launching the festival in the Hydro Hotel.
And we'll come back to exactly what's happening this year. And could you talk us through the history of it kind of briefly and tell us what it's all about?
This is actually the 162nd year. It started in 1856. There was water discovered, like sort of therapeutic water discovered down in the spa. And people used to come, like the sort of landed gentry used to come down to take the waters. And an informal kind of matchmaking took place between the, you know, the different families.
Yeah.
So it kind of all started very informally. And it actually used to be throngs. If you look at the old photographs, there were throngs of people used to come to Listunvarna at those times. And then Willie Daly, there's a matchmaker we have in the town. His grandfather got involved somewhere along the way, and he started doing his own matchmaking.
Wow.
And then that was sort of passed on through the generations. And now Willie is the third generation matchmaker in the town.
And
also his daughter is taking over now as well. She'll be the fourth generation matchmaker.
I've been in Listunvarna on many of the occasions throughout September down through the years. I won't be there, unfortunately, this year. I know that you can see Willie Daly, the matchmaker, walking around, strolling around Listunvarna at any time of the day or night, or maybe inside in one of the dance halls or the marquees or the hotel receptions or the bars. And under his arm, he's got a big, thick book. He works from a book, doesn't he?
And he's got this book. He calls it his lucky book. You've probably heard it being referred to as his lucky book. It's like stuffed full of letters and memorabilia. And he has these application forms that people actually fill in on the night. So you put down your name and address and single, married, your hobbies. And it's a bit of a laugh, really. I mean, he does matchmake people. And he has, you know, I have actually met people that have been matched by him. But people come just for to get the photograph taken with Willie. In the matchmaker bar, he calls it his office, kind of a little room in the matchmaker bar. I don't know whether you've seen it. And there's all the old photographs on the walls. And actually, on a Friday and Saturday night in Listunvarna, there is like queues of people waiting outside the office to meet him and to touch the lucky book, because Willie says if you touch the lucky book, you could be married within 6 months. He has this little saying that touch the lucky book. So a lot of people are lining up to put their hands on his lucky book. It's just a bit of a laugh, really, to be honest, you know. But we do get people from all over the world. I mean, I have to say, like this year, I've had people contact me from Russia this year, America, England, Ireland, you know, Spain, there's a lot of Germans actually coming this year with a huge interest from Germany. And we've got two film crews coming this year to film at the festival, because we had a journalist over last year and she wrote a big article, and there's been like a massive surge of interest since those articles went in the press. So it's very international.
Down through the years, being in Listunvarna, I have seen film crews and radio crews from Japan, from China, from America, from Germany, from Finland, from Norway, from England, from Ireland. They come from all over the world, don't they?
They do. I think it's basically people come because it's just so different, that there's this old traditional festival that's been going on for so long, and it's actually gaining in popularity again. It is actually getting more popular because we've introduced the country music weekend, so we're getting a lot more young people. But I think it's just the novelty of the fact that it's offline dating. You know, there's so yes. many apps. And there in the west of Ireland, we have this old traditional festival. I mean, people just find it completely intriguing that there is this kind of getting together of singles without mobile phones, that people just come and they enjoy themselves and they dance. And it's just a bit of fun, really. And then obviously you can go and see the matchmaker as well.
Now, you don't have to be looking for a match. You can bring your match with you if you want to on the way to Listenvarna. And there's music in the pubs and in any kind of outlets. And there's dancing morning, noon and night for the month of September. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, basically the music starts on, like, on the 31st of August at 11 a.m. and it goes on for the whole month. I mean, there's really nowhere in Ireland that you will get that for a whole solid month, people coming every single day for dancing. It's 15 venues around the town, you know, little dance floors and pubs, and there's like live bands and music playing everywhere. You know, it's a brilliant atmosphere. And then at night time, you know, it kind of spills out to the street. So people, somebody referred to me at once, it's like being abroad in Ireland. You know, if you get the nice balmy summer weather,
yeah,
it's a lovely place to be just on a, you know, on a summer's evening. You know, there's a great atmosphere on the street as well. And as there's a real mixture of music. I mean, we have a lot of country music, obviously, but we also have bands playing cover music. There's a real variety of music and people love that. And we actually have the same people coming every single year. I see the same people, couples that have met at the festival, they come back every year to celebrate and make and meet new friends.
It used to be a situation where, you know, all of the work on the farm was done by the end of August and the silage was done and whatever else needed to be done. And farmers used to take their holidays in the month of September and travel to Listunvarna in the hopes of finding a woman. And women used to take their holidays from whatever they were doing and they'd go and hopefully find a man as well. And there are still people, as you say, in their 70s and in their 60s and indeed late 50s, and they're still going back there year after year. Isn't that right?
So true. And actually about 2 years ago, there was an old man that I met, and he was 90, and we found out just through talking to him that he had been coming to Listunvarna for 70 years and he hadn't missed a year.
Wow.
70 years of coming to Listunvarna, and he still hadn't met a wife, which is a bit sad, really. We had a bit of a celebration for him down at the Spa Wells. There was a cake and Willie Daly made a speech and, you know, presented him with his cake. But he just loved coming. He just loved the atmosphere, you know, and meeting people. He was an old farmer from Tipperary.
Great.
He got quite a lot of publicity, I think, at the time because, you know, he's the longest person we know that's been coming to the festival without a break every year.
It may be a little bit late for anybody listening to us in Spain or indeed other parts of the world at the minute online who might say, God, that'd be fun. But is there a website that people can look at and check out what's happening, or maybe even think about planning for next year?
Some people can still come this year because, as I say, it's a really long festival. I mean, it's on for 5 weeks. Yeah. So, you know, if you get a last minute flight from Spain, you can still make it to the end of the festival.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's Ireland's longest festival and one of the, you know, the longest running festivals as well.
Yeah.
So, we update the website on a regular basis and all the details are on matchmakerireland.com. But also we have a Facebook page. So if you just like Google Listunvarna matchmaking, you know, we use that a lot, you know, to update it and run competitions and give information about what's happening around the town. It's a very active community and people interact a lot on the Facebook pages, and even people are, you know, looking for love through Facebook, you know, contacting us at the hotel.
I googled Listunvarna on Wikipedia just before we started chatting. According to the 2011 census, there are 739 people living in Listunvarna. What numbers does that swell to for the month of September?
Well, you wouldn't believe it. There's 80,000 people that
you
come.
You are kidding!
Over the month of September, and actually it's growing year on year. I think last year was one of our biggest years ever. I think we had 10,000 people on the second weekend. So it is like a huge festival. Swells, obviously, at the weekends is like the peak time. If you're driving through Listunvarna, there's not a car park space to be found.
No, I know.
It's absolutely packed.
I know.
And I think, you know, everyone has to come to Listunvarna. It's one of those things in life that you have to say that you've tried it. You know, it's just great crack and everyone is so friendly in the bars, and, you know, you'll always get asked to dance. So there's no problem with that.
Indeed. And as well as that, just before I let you go, I know that for people that would come to Listunvarna, it's a small area, but there's lots happening. There are also events that are being held in other places, like there are trips to the Cliffs of Moher and there's trips to Doolin and trips to Liscannor? And
well, I mean, Listenbourne is very well placed because it's kind of in the centre area, and you're about 5 miles from the Cliffs of Moher. You're a few miles from Doolin, you know, with the piers to the Aran Island, you know, the boats to the Aran Island. And then there's the Alway Caves down in Ballyvaughan. The Burn is nearby. I mean, you can actually just walk outside Listenbourne and you're in the Burn. Not, you know, it's not too far away. There's loads to do. Ennis is only like 25 minutes away. So if people are coming from abroad, you know, you could base yourself in Listenbourne and even go to Galway for the day. Galway's only 45 minutes away from Listenbourne. So it's a great location. I mean, if you just want to go for the dancing at nighttime, you can go touring around at the day and then come back and enjoy the entertainment at nighttime. And a lot of people do that.
At the beginning, you were mentioning to me that there was a host of wonderful acts lined up, and I said we'd come back to that. So tell us, I know it all kicks off on Friday evening, the 31st. What have we got in store in Listenbourne?
We have Jerry Guthrie, country music singer, and Declan Nerney. They're playing in the Marquee, which is just beside the Hydro Hotel. And we have Lisa McHugh then on the Saturday night. And then we have like a country music DJ, a guy called Jerry Sexton. He plays after them. And also there's music all over town, obviously, as well. The following weekend, which is our second country music weekend, which I think is probably going to be even bigger, Mike Denver and Cleona Hagen playing on the Friday night. And we have Derek Ryan and Blue Ridge Country Band playing on the Saturday night. Tickets on the door. If anybody is, you know, obviously is coming from Spain, you can still get tickets. You arrive over.
All right. They've only got a couple of days to get themselves there.
Yeah. Well, they've got 2 weeks, I suppose. Well, like 10 days, I suppose.
Well, listen, Julie, we wish you the very best of luck with your 162nd matchmaking festival in Listenbourne. I hope it's going to be a great year for you. And I'll be thinking of you regularly throughout September as I enjoy the sunshine here in Spain. How's that?
Well, that's great. Thanks for having me.
Julie, thanks very much for talking to me. That's Julie Carr, the marketing and public relations person that looks after the White Hotel Group and the Listenbourne Matchmaking Festival as well.
How's it going there, everybody from Cork, New York, Dundalk, Gortahawk and Glenamaddy? Here we are in the County Clare, and it's a long, long way from here to there. There's the Burren and the Cliffs of Moher and the Tulla and the Kilfenor and Mike O'Russell, Dr. Bill, Willie Clancy and Noel Hill. Flutes and fiddles everywhere. If it's music you want, you should go to Clare.
Oh, Listenbourne, Listenbourne.
Sure, everybody needs a break. Climb a mountain or jump in a lake. Some head off to exotic places. Others go to the Galway races. A cousin of mine goes potholing. A cousin of hers loves Joe Dolan. Matty goes to the south of France, and Jim to the dogs, and Peter to the dance. Summer comes around each year. We go there and they come here. Some jet off to Frihiliana, but I always go to Listenbourne.
Oh, Listenbourne, Listenbourne.
I always leave of a Thursday night with my tent and my ground sheet rolled up tight. I like to hit Listone in or around Friday afternoon. This gives me time to get my gear together. I don't need to worry about the weather. Ramble in for a pint of stout, because you never know who'd be hanging about. There's a Dutchman playing a mandolin, a German looking for Limogo Flynn, and there's Adam Bono and Gareth Fitzgerald getting their foot taken for the Sunday World. Finbar Charlie and Jim Hand, and they're drinking pints to bathe the band, and they're grand.
Oh, Listenbourne, Listenbourne.
Multitudes, they flock in throngs to hear the music and the songs, and motorbikes and high-ass vans with bottles, barrels, flagons, cans. Mighty crack. Loads of frolics. Pioneers and alcoholics, and Clack Spook in the FCA, and Free Mickey Kelly in the IRA, and Hairy Chests and Milk White Ties, and Mickey Dodgers in disguise. McGraths, O'Briens, Pippins, Coxes, massage parlours and horse boxes, RTE or making tapes, taking breaks and throwing shapes. There's Aurons, Bowrons, Amadons, Arab sheiks, Hindu Sikhs, Jesus freaks. This is heaven, this is hell. Who cares? Who can tell? Anyone for the last few chuck ices now?
Oh, Listenbourne, Listenbourne.
747 for Jackson Browne. They had to build a special room just to get him down before the chieftains could start to play. Seven creamy pints came out in a tray. Shergar was ridden by Lord Lucan. Sean Cannon did the backstage cooking. Clannad were playing Harry's game, and Christy was singing Nancy Spain. And Mary O'Hara and Brush Shields together doing the Four Green Fields. Van the Man and Emmy Lou and Moving Hearts and Planxty too.
Oh, Listern Bar.
Everybody needs a break. Climb a mountain or jump in a lake. Sean Doherty goes to the Rose of Tralee, and Oliver J. Flanagan goes swimming in the Holy Sea. But I like my music in the open air, so every summer I go to Clare, cause Woodstock Knock nor the Feast of Cana could hold a match to Listoon Varna.
Oh, Listoon Varna.
Sure, there was only one song that we could come out of the matchmaking festival piece with, the wonderful Christy Moore. A song called Listoon Varna.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
Some weeks ago, when I was telling you about things that were happening on a particular week in the history books in relation to Ireland, I mentioned the anniversary of the Spanish Armada, and I said that we will be doing more on that at a later time, and indeed we will, and I would imagine that it won't be just one or two events that we'll be talking about, our little trips that we'll make to talk about the Spanish Armada. But the Spanish Armada Festival happens in Sligo from the 21st to the 23rd of September. And Eddie O'Gorman is chairman of Grange and Armada Development Association in Sligo, and he joins me on the phone. Eddie, good evening, and thank you for joining us today.
Good evening, Ger.
Firstly, how are you all in Sligo?
Well, we're in very good form. We had a lovely summer, and while the autumn is threatening, we'll suffer it.
You'll weather it on.
We will, because we have to remember that coming September, September did for the Spanish Armada what most damage. We have 26 wrecks, as you probably know, Ger.
Yeah.
Scattered all the way from the Causeway Coast down to Kerry. Mm-hmm. And probably the most important and iconic site is the site of Strigia in North Sligo, where three Spanish Armada ships lie beneath the waves.
The Spanish Armada Festival, tell me about that and the origins of it. I know it's obviously the Spanish Armada, but when did the festival start and how did it all come about?
What we're doing actually is commemorating the horrendous loss of life back in the 21st of September 1588, when over 1,100 people died on the beach as a result of the shipwrecks of three great ships of the Armada. But we built a series of events around that. We started off in 2011. Well, this particular iteration of Grange and Armada Development Association started off in 2011. Previous committees were very involved in various events, particularly around the quadcentenary in 1988, when there was a pop-up museum and there was various events, and we had lots of distinguished visitors from Spain. But we started again in 2011, and this is our eighth year now.
You did say that you had, down through the years, you had visitors from Spain. Do I recall correctly that at one point the Spanish Navy was in Sligo with you?
Absolutely. This will be the third year that we'll have a ship from the modern Armada visit. In 2016, we had the OPV Centinela. Last year we had the Arno Mendi, and this year OPV Atalaya is visiting.
So, on the 21st, or from the 21st of September until the 23rd, what can people expect from the Spanish Armada commemoration or festival?
We've built a series of events around it, but probably the most important event is the commemoration, which is, this year we're doing a twilight parade from Strigia Shore, which is where the wrecks are, to the Spanish Armada Monument, which is about a kilometre from the shore to the monument. And we'll have a wreath-laying ceremony. And we're hoping that some of the officers and men from the visiting ship will be present. We certainly know that the Admiral Ruesta, who is a very high-ranking officer of the modern Armada, will be on shore. The ship will be offshore laying a wreath between the hours of 6 and 7 p.m. And we'll have some form of tribute, which has yet to be decided. by at the monument.
Okay. How important is the link between Ireland and Spain for you in Sligo and indeed people involved in this?
What we're endeavouring to do is to build a tourist product based around the idea of the stories of the Armada. You may be aware that one of the most famous survivors of the Armada was one Francisco de Cuellar, and he left a wonderful record of his time in this carta, which he wrote to somebody at court. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful record of the times and the people of the Northwest in 1588.
And how did he manage to survive, do we know? Because
with great difficulty.
Yeah. I mean, even families that held, that hid other, sailors, they were turned in by neighbours and stuff, weren't they?
There was horrendous stuff happening in Ireland at the time. But the people of the Northwest did harbour a lot of the survivors of the Striga wrecks and other wrecks from Donegal. It was a wild and lawless time in the Northwest. It was largely unpopulated. But you have to remember that the Spaniards that came ashore, they were Catholic, and they were meeting the local people who were Catholic. How did they converse? Well, when you were under stress, because the English garrisons out of places like Sligo and Ballymote were marauding all along the coast, and they were stringing up every Spaniard they came across.
Right.
But the Irish generally behaved admirably in giving succour to the poor sailors and survivors that made it on shore. We were very interested. The local people who were watching the wreckings taking place were very interested in gathering up whatever booty they could, but they left the people largely untouched unless they put up some resistance if they wanted to take their clothing.
All right.
But how did Francisco survive? He was sheltered by two particular local chieftains, O'Rourke of Breffni and McClancy of Dartry. And in fact, the scene of his greatest triumph was in Dartry, when he defended a castle at Rathclogher against an army of 1,300 with only 8 Spaniards.
Wow. Wow.
He really did. He was a great hero. And indeed, McClancy wanted to hold on to him and was not at all pleased when he left for the Causeway Coast in the hope of making his way to Scotland and thereafter the Spanish Netherlands, which happened.
Right.
Yes, so he was an extraordinary survivor, a swashbuckling hero, and he's left a wonderful record in the archives.
Do you need to be up to date with what happened with the Spanish Armada to enjoy some of the events that will be happening on between the 21st and the 23rd of September?
Absolutely not. Mm. Apart from the visit of the ship, we have performances by an international music ensemble. We've been developing contacts between Galicia and Ireland. We've had several people from folk groups who came over and performed in a de Cuellar suite, which was specially commissioned back in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Guided walks all along the de Cuellar trail, following in the footsteps of the famous survivor. We have a waymarked trail here in Striga. And we will have a bus tour of the Dartry Range, following in the footsteps of Francisco de Cuellar. We'll also have a Sunday market and music, and there'll be lots of things happening around the village from the Friday to the Sunday.
All right. It certainly sounds like it's going to be an interesting few days. Is there a website that people can log on to see what's coming up and maybe keep up to date?
There is indeed, Ger, www.SpanishArmadaIreland.com.
Okay. Well, you know that we're here. We're the only Irish radio programme in Spain here on TRE. And if there's anything that you think we can do for you in the future, please pick up the phone. You have our contact details and I'd be absolutely delighted to assist. All right?
That's much appreciated, Ger.
We might even touch base after the event and just see how things went for you over the weekend of the 21st and 23rd. All right?
Well, we're issuing an invitation to all the Spanish people resident in Ireland to come. We're building numbers as the years go by, and we have frequent visitors, and all the sites associated, and particularly the site of Striga where the wrecks happened, they're all atmospheric and very evocative of the horrible things that happened back in 1588, but also the great triumphs of the of Francisco's story.
Great, and of course the kindness of the Irish people in the area.
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Eddie O'Gorman is chairman of Grange and Armada Development Association. The Spanish Armada Festival happens from the 21st to the 23rd of September, and you can find out more at www.spanisharmadaireland.com. Eddie, thank you for joining us, and the best of luck on the weekend.
Thank you very much, Ger.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Right, we like to look at history on the programme every so often, and we like to give you little historical bits and pieces, and that's exactly what I'm going to do now, but a little differently than we normally do. Limerick people are still celebrating the huge win from the All-Ireland last weekend, and I suppose when you think about hurling in Ireland, you think about Kilkenny, and the Kilkenny lads and girls, when they go out onto the field and they're carrying a hurley, they can never be described as shying away from a battle. However, that has not always been the case when it comes to things like the Easter Rising and the War of Independence. And it appears that down through the years, there has been a certain amount of criticism levelled at the people of Kilkenny for not doing their bit during the War of Independence and the likes of Easter Rising and so on and so forth. Now, a new book, which is titled Kilkenny in Times of Revolution, 1900 to 1923, is currently on sale. And the author, Owen Swithin Walsh, joins me on the line. Owen, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks for having me here.
Not at all. I had no idea that the Kilkenny people came in for a little bit of slack for not, as we'll say, pulling their weight during times of troubles in Ireland. Tell me about it.
Yes, I suppose what happened, and this is the reason why I first got into this from the very start, is that I had read Ernie O'Malley's famous Another Man's Wound, first published in the 1930s, and he criticised Kilkenny for being slack in the very first line of one of the chapters.
Right.
And I remember thinking, kind of as a young person, oh, really, would that all the contribution of Kilkenny be just kind of a one-word synopsis? So what I did is, when I was studying a Master's in History in UCD, and I focused on this, and then the last 4 or 5 years, I've broadened the research to see what Kilkenny did actually achieve. And I suppose not to ruin the ending of the book, but I kind of found out that a lot of people contributed a lot, and that summation wasn't good enough. And the main reason Matt O'Malley said that is, and O'Malley was captured in Kilkenny. So famously, Ernie O'Malley was an IRA volunteer organiser. He's very famous. He was shot a number of times in the Civil War and nearly died. And he came down to Kilkenny to attack this place called Woodstock House in Inisteig, in beautiful Inisteig. It's a real kind of tourist haven now. Just the day before they were planning it, and he was in Inisteig, he was captured by the auxiliary and well beaten up. And he remained in prison for a few months after it. And the biggest scandal, we'll say, from the Kilkenny point of view, was that O'Malley had on him his diary. And in his diary, he had written out all the OCs, or the officers commanding all the different battalions, IRA battalions, Irish Republican Army, Irish Volunteers, as they were known before 1919. Yeah. And he had all their names of all the officers commanding and all the captains. So there was a list of 90-something names with addresses. So when the auxiliaries got that, they knew exactly who was involved in each area, in each parish. And a big roundup of a lot of the leaders of the Kilkenny volunteer movement was captured after that. When his book came out, and I should say the history books afterwards, they mightn't mention Kilkenny at all, but they'll say, oh, Ernie O'Malley was captured in Kilkenny, you know, and that would be the only reference to Kilkenny. So I think what I was trying to do and look and see, well, see, was it true, first of all? Because, you know, I was trying to come at this, you know, as objective as possible, and looking to see, did he, you know, what was it, a fair synopsis? But then when I kind of dug into it, I was like, well, maybe, no, this not really, because there was lots of people willing to do their bit, and there was lots of altercations. There was people that didn't want to be involved and did want to be involved, and they were all kind of caught up, even if they didn't want to. I think of, you know, if our Taoiseach asked me today, would you go out and die for your country tomorrow? You'd be probably going, no, maybe not.
After you, Leo.
Exactly. So I just think of my grandparents and these people that were actually, like, you know, they were just farmers and shopkeepers, and they really got kind of maybe caught up in a revolution that maybe they didn't want to be in the first place, but they felt this was the right thing to do because they felt what was happening was unjust, especially when, even if you look at like the likes of the infamous Black and Tans and the auxiliaries, they were sent over as a kind of a counter-terrorist terrorist force. That's what the British government called them. But when you actually look into it, you see that, you know, from the very top, they were given this policy of reprisal was okay. And reprisal being, you know, if someone was shot here, attacked here, you burnt down the houses in the vicinity or whatever. Mm. But what they did is they kind of terrorized more the civilians than they actually did the people who are meant to be getting, if you know what I mean. And that pushed more people into supporting the movement of trying to, you know, fight for Irish freedom. So in a way, they kind of shot themselves in the foot. And then people were thinking, well, actually, the Black and Tans and the auxiliaries, who were the highest paid police force in the world then in 1920-21, and they're on a pound a day, which is a lot of money then. People were trying to say with them, well, this is their taxpayers' money, you know, that's paying for these people to come over to protect us, but actually they're not protecting us. You know, so I think it kind of pushed people, a lot of people, in different directions.
Now, we just need to probably clarify at this stage for people who may not be familiar with Irish history way back in the 1900s, is that the IRA that we speak of was the official army of the Republic at the time. It's not the IRA that people would be familiar with from the 60s, 70s and 80s and so on in relation to the Troubles. No, so Ernie O'Malley kind of threw the stone and everybody else picked up on it. And I see that you're a Kilkenny man. You're from Mooncoin, the place that the famous song was written about. So was this a labour of love and a labour of pride to restore some pride and come out and say, listen, lads, the Kilkenny people did actually play their role or play their part in 1916 during the Civil War and the War of Independence?
Like, as we're trained as historians now, you try to come at it, you know, even though everyone has a bias or something, but I try to come at it at a view going, wait a second, I just want to see if this is true or not first, and see did Wassey Kenny slack and did they not come at it. But then the more I delved into it, I couldn't believe, literally, and this is the same all over Ireland, I believe anyway, nearly in every single village in Kilkenny had some kind of involvement or some kind of, it may not be an official ambush or an attack, but there was boycotting going on. There was people attacking the RIC, the local policemen. There was all these little things. And then, you know, your businesses would suffer. And also, I'm trying to say that everyone was kind of somewhat affected. But I suppose I kind of knew and said, well, if we look into it, and what we do find, even if you just look at the military aspect, because there's all these different aspects of a revolution, like any revolution all around the world. You've got the military aspect, which everyone kind of knows, which is the funny thing. But also you've got the political aspect as well, where, you know, people are trying to move on the political side of things. Kilkenny was quite strong in that. So what I mean is, like the old IRA, the old Sinn Féin, which was basically a catch-all party, which had like W.T. Cosgrave, who later found Fine Gael, Éamon de Valera was in Sinn Féin. It was very kind of middle ground, conservative, catch-all party at the time. They really made inroads in Kilkenny. But I suppose when I looked into it, I found that, you know, there was flying columns in Kilkenny. There was at least 6 or 7 successful ambushes in Kilkenny. There was another, you could even say double that, kind of ambushes or attacks that didn't come off, or something happened or something wrong. There was a number of fatalities as well. There was 22 people killed. And I kind of wanted to remember 22 people. And I make no differentiation between the 8 IRA men and the 8 Crown Force people that died as well. You know, mm-hmm. So they're there as well. There's also civilians killed. When you look into this, people are affected in a myriad of ways. The most controversial instance of the whole thing, well, in the history books, it was Ernie O'Malley's arrest in Woodstock. But if you bring it down to a human level, there was a pregnant lady shot dead in Callan, County Kilkenny.
Okay.
And that caused a sensation. Again, it's not remembered because she was a civilian and she was looking out the window of her shop during the funeral, and a stray bullet came in from an auxiliary and she died about 2 days later. Okay. But I once was shine a spotlight on them as I got more into it. So initially I was looking at it and going, yes, as you said in your question there, initially I was looking at it and going, you know, I need to show what actually happened in Kilkenny by the fighting, the political and the military side. But then as I delved into it, I was like, wait a second, there's all these normal people, you know, that could have been my grandparents or great-grandparents living in the time, and they were being affected. So I brought them into the story as well. And like that woman from Callan, Margaret Ryan, I was just trying to maybe bring her story back to life as well.
Oh, and 2 years ago, anybody or any corner of the world where there was an Irish person, including here in Spain, celebrated the Easter Rising of 1916, or marked it, whether celebrated would be the right word. We marked the thing. Is it important as we approach the centenary of the Civil War and indeed the War of Independence that the record be set straight? Was there an element of that for you as well in this?
Yeah, I suppose there was. Now, and I must say the commemorations in 1916 was done quite well. I thought, you know, people talked about it and lots of different aspects of it were examined. And I think we have to take the same approach to the War of Independence and Civil War. Yes, I definitely did want to maybe not necessarily to set the record straight, but if you look at something for like the Civil War, there's actually very few books in the Civil War. You know, a very few detailed examinations of maybe say the ground level of the Civil War. You know, there is a good bit on the War of Independence and 1916, of course, and I presume there'll be kind of an avalanche as it comes up towards the war in the next few years. But I think there was definitely a need to go, well, because someone asked me, you know, who actually died? How many people died in the Civil War? Yeah. And if you say that about Ireland or Kilkenny, no one can give you a definitive figure. So I was trying to do, well, first of all, obviously, who did, who took their part, who fought, and what was their points of view? And the Civil War, and again, the way I think it should be done, just like, and people get worried about it, you know, but I think if you just examine each situation individually and examine the stories in the individual, so what you don't come down to the very start and go, all this side were wrong and all this side were right. Mm. What you do is you go down and you look at, and I was examining every single kind of, I could find kind of attack or ambush or death, and examine the person who was killed, the people who done the killing, and what were the context of it. And what you're doing there is then you're just explaining the story of this situation. You're not saying in the whole premise overall who's right and who's wrong. To me, I think that's the right approach to take. One day I'd be going, oh God, them, the anti-treaty guys won or were terrible, horrible. The next day, yeah. Them free state guys are horrible. And like then by the end of it, I was like, I don't know who I like or dislike more. I was shocked at myself because I thought that maybe I'd come down on one side or the other. But every new situation, you were completely going back. And I actually, I wrote a story. There was a battle in Kilkenny just prior to the Civil War in Kilkenny City. And it wasn't well known, but it was just about a month before the Civil War officially started. And actually, Kilkenny could have been, if there was people killed in this battle, Kilkenny could have been the foundation of the Civil War in Ireland. You know, we all know it was 28th of June in Dublin when they attacked the forecourts, but it could have been Kilkenny because the anti-treaty IRA took over all these buildings around Kilkenny and the Free State attacked them. What you get then is, you know, you get a kind of a, where people are kind of worried and nervous and they don't know whether it's going to kick off or not kick off. But I wrote a story about that. I remember my cousin reading it afterwards and going, wait a second, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys?
Yeah.
And to me, that
well, that's good.
That was good, yeah. That was perfect for me because that's the way I wanted to approach it, because I wanted to sit in defence. But what I was trying to do is show why people would want to be on different sides and not judge.
Well, look, it's a great book, and I would recommend it highly to anybody from the Kilkenny area, or indeed anybody from Ireland who would be interested in finding out a little bit more about Kilkenny. Sure, Christmas is only around the corner. I shouldn't be saying that,
but there you go. I was going to say, if you want as well, Tipperary and Wexford and Waterford.
All those counties that touch Kilkenny. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, listen, it's published by the Merrion Press. It's called Kilkenny in Times of Revolution, 1900 to 1923. It's written by the man we've just been talking to, Owen Swithin Walsh from Mooncoin in County Kilkenny. And Owen, I thank you very much for joining us today on Talk Radio Europe. We wish you well with the book, and sure, we might chat again.
We will, and thanks very much for having me, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm standing on the corner with a bucket in my hand, sitting waiting for a woman, ain't got no man. Let my book that's got a hole in it, but my book has got a hole in it. Book has got a hole in it. Can't buy no beer. Well, I went up on the mountain, looked down in the sea, seen the crabs and the fishes doing the beep up feet. Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. Well, my book has got a hole in it. Book has got a hole in it. Can't buy no beer. Buckets got a hole in it. Buckets got a hole in it. Oh, buckets got a hole in it. Can't buy no beer. Can't buy no beer. look, it's got a hole in it. Her final piece.
A number of years ago, Van Morrison released an album that was entirely country. And that's a track taken from that. It's a lovely track called My Bucket's Got a Hole in It. Right, let's have a look and see what was happening down through the years in history in relation to Ireland. It was on this very day, the 27th of August, back in 1870, that the Oceanic, a liner built in Belfast by Harland and Wolff for the White Star Line, was launched. 1928 on this day, the Galway Gaelic Theatre, afterwards called the Taifeark Theatre, opened with Micheál MacLeamore's production of Diarmaid August Grainne. 1937 on this day, the first traffic lights in the Free State were installed at the junction of Merrion Square and Clare Street in Dublin. And in 1979, the assassination of Lord Louis Mountbatten off the coast of County Sligo. Tomorrow is the 28th of August, and we celebrate the anniversary of the first horse-drawn tram cars entering service in Belfast. That happened in 1872. 1877, Charles Stewart Parnell became president of the Home Rule Confederation. And in 1975, Willie John McBride retired from international rugby. Wednesday is the 29th of August. It was on that day in 1890 that the Science and Art Museum and the National Library opened in Dublin. 1975, the death of Eamon de Valera was announced, and in the year 2000, according to Transparency International's annual corruption index, Ireland had slipped 5 places and was then perceived as the 3rd most corrupt country in Europe. The 3rd only, yeah. On that day as well, of course, we celebrate the birthday of Dick Spring, former politician. He was born in Tralee in 1950, so he's going to be 68 years old on Wednesday. On Thursday, it's the 30th of August, 1690, the first siege of Limerick ended. 1841, the Cork Examiner, now the Irish Examiner, hit the streets for the very first time. In 1911, the Chamber of Commerce called for Ireland to adopt Greenwich Mean Time, 25 minutes behind Irish Standard Time. In the year 2000, the SDLP leader, John Hume, announced his intention to quit as a Stormont Assembly member. And in 2013, the world-renowned poet and playwright Seamus Heaney died in Dublin. Friday is the 31st of August, and it was on that date in 1994 that the IRA announced their ceasefire, the first ceasefire, which later broke down about 18 months or so afterwards, and then thankfully things went back on track again. It's also the anniversary of the birth of Pádraig Harrington, the golfer, born 47 years ago, born in Dublin 1971, and Todd Carty, who played many characters on TV, but Mark Fowler in EastEnders was one of those. He was born in Limerick in 1963, so we say happy 55th birthday to that man on Friday. Saturday is the 1st of September. Lads, it's hard to imagine it's the 1st of September already. 1737 on that day, the launch of the Belfast Newsletter, now the oldest surviving newspaper in Ireland or Britain, and one of the oldest in the world. 1830, Dublin Zoo opened, and in 1999, Van Morrison became the first inductee to the Hot Press Irish Music Hall of Fame. And now you know why we were playing Van Morrison on the programme today. Matthew McGrath, politician, was born in Clonmel on the 1st of September in 1958, so happy 60th birthday to him next Saturday. And a well-known and well-loved politician from Limerick, unfortunately no longer with the people of Limerick, a man by the name of Jim Kenny. He was born in Limerick in 1936 on the 1st of September as well. And finally, Sunday is the 2nd of September, and 1752 on that day, the Gregorian calendar was adopted in Ireland and Britain, 170 years after mainland Europe. So the 2nd of September on that year was followed by the 14th of September. Wow, Christmas came a lot earlier that year. 1890, did you just say the C word? I did, I'm afraid. 1893, the second Home Rule Bill was passed by the House of Commons. 1933, on the 2nd of September, Cumann na Gael, the Centre Party and the National Guard, once known as the Blue Shirts, joined forces to form what we now know as Fine Gael. And it was on the 2nd of September 2002 that Ireland formed an alliance with Germany, Austria, Belgium, Denmark and Greece in a bid to limit the expansion of nuclear energy. That's it. Just some of the events that happened on this coming week down through the years in history in relation to Ireland.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era. Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
You will remember a couple of weeks ago I spoke to Jerome O'Connell from the Limerick Leader about the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final, which was gripping both Galway and Limerick. And Limerick, of course, triumphant by 1 point on the day. Well, it's the turn of the Irish footballers, the Gaelic footballers, on this coming Sunday, the 2nd of September. And Tyrone will be taking on the current champions, Dublin. I'm joined on the line right now by Francis Mooney. Francis is a freelance GAA correspondent based in Tyrone. Francis, Francis. Good evening and thanks very much for taking the call.
Good evening, Ger.
Tyrone, they haven't won the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship since 2008, so there's a 10-year gap, which isn't too bad. But is there a little bit of football fever?
Well, yes, it's been a long time. 10 years is a long time in the calendar of a highly rated top four team. To get back to an All-Ireland final, it's been long awaited, and there's probably a new generation of young Tyrone people who don't really remember the last one, who now are gripped by football fever, and the older people as well, of course. The flags are out, the bunting is out, and the county has been painted red and white.
Oh, lovely. Now, it was a very difficult task for them to get over Monaghan in the semi-final, and a lot of people didn't think that Tyrone would do it, but you managed to do it, and I know that you're going into the game on Sunday as underdogs. Does that suit Tyrone?
Well, they always say that semi-finals are about getting over the line and getting a result, and then finals are about really blossoming and doing what you need to do to win a title.
Right.
Having said that, Dublin are formidable champions. They're going for four in a row. They're arguably the best team the Gaelic football has ever produced. So this is going to be a massive task for Tyrone. And to win this one will probably be their greatest ever triumph.
As they say sometimes, there won't be a cow milked for a week in such a place when an event happens that wasn't expected. So if there is a Tyrone win, do you think that the whole county will go absolutely crazy?
For sure.
Yeah.
The schools in the county, most schools in the county have already given their pupils a day off on the Monday.
Really?
After the game, hopefully in anticipation of a success. But this is a football mad county. Hurling isn't played very much in Tyrone. It's played at a certain level, just a few clubs and a county team that plays in the lower reaches of the National League. But football is practically a religion here in Tyrone, and the place will go mad should they happen to upset the odds and get a win on Sunday.
All right. Well, now, I did explain to you that I'm not a hurling or a football buff, and I explained that to Jerome when I was talking to him about hurling. But is there anything happening now? I know that we're only at Monday already, so it's usually Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that things start to happen in relation to teams being named and, you know, people really talking about team news. But at the moment, is there anything happening team-wise that we should know about?
There is a rumour during the rounds that a young prospect who left Tyrone 3 or 4 years ago as an 18-year-old to join an Australian rules club is about to be brought home for the final.
Right.
Now, it might be fanciful thinking, but Conor McKenna was a great talent. He played minor football for Tyrone for 3 years. He was looked upon as the next great prospect, but Australian rules club Essendon snapped him up, and he's been having a great time over there playing really good football in the AFL. This is the rumour mill going into overtime. I would expect that it's nothing more than a rumour.
All right. Mickey Hart, the manager, will have a lot of work to do with his team. What do you think he'll be telling them?
I think he'll be telling them to believe in themselves. He'll be working very strongly on a particular tactical plan, a plan A and a plan B. Every manager needs to have a plan B. I think he'll be deciding that he needs to go with a more offensive approach. The defensive system that he took into last year's semi-final didn't work. Tyrone were beaten by 12 points by Dublin. He will feel that he needs to go more attacking this time, but he will need to strike a balance between defence and attack, because one or the other alone will not cut it. All you right. need to have a balance between the two.
All right. And yourself, will you be in Dublin on the day?
Oh, yes, I'll be there as a supporter and a journalist, trying to enjoy it and to give my support to the team while doing some work at the same time.
And can you enjoy it? I mean, and you, because when you go to a game with that, as a journalist, you have to concentrate very heavily and very, very seriously. But can you enjoy it and work at the same time?
I think sometimes the supporters can't even enjoy it, you know, because the tension is so great. But yes, you can to an extent. You can detach yourself. And I suppose the more experience you get, the more you find a way to right. balance the two and to get the work done and still take in the atmosphere and the enjoyment of the sporting occasion.
All right. Well, I can tell you that the Sweeneys have a great base in Dungannon in Tyrone. They would be my family. My grandfather came from Armagh originally and then moved to Dungannon. So next Sunday, I will absolutely be flying the red and white flag, and I wish you and everybody in Tyrone the very best. And if you pull it off, and I hope you do, I hope you have a wonderful celebration at it. All right.
Thanks very much, sir.
Francis Mooney, freelance GAA correspondent in Tyrone. Tyrone, thank you for joining us this afternoon and this evening on Talk Radio Europe.
And that's my lot for today. Thank you very much indeed for tuning in to the programme. Do hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have enjoyed presenting it to you. Thank you to all my guests and thank you to my colleagues here on Talk Radio Europe for the continued support and promotion of the programme on a weekly basis. Thank you especially as well to Jose Antonio Sierra, our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant. Our email address, if you'd like to get in touch with the programme, is ger@talkradioeurope.com. ger@talkradioeurope.com. That's it. Thank you very much again for listening. Do hope you've enjoyed it. Look after yourselves and each other for the coming week, and I'll see you next Monday. Bye-bye now.